he realized that nothing had improved, no matter what he had done or had not done. In fact, it had gotten much worse. Things in the world had gotten worse since he started doing his work. So imagine having that realization, because he wondered, have I wasted my life? Have I wasted my ministry? And I really felt that when I read that. I really felt this heart connection with his anguish. Because I don't want to do that. I don't want to look back on my ministry and say, did anything I do make any difference, you know?
Yes.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. I'm not up here asking you to say yes. I just want you to know what's been going through my mind lately.
She's going somewhere with it.
I am going somewhere. So in June of this year, we'll mark 20 years since I've been ordained. And thank you. Yeah. For Gary, it will be 39 years. Yes. And as I thought, and something else happened just recently, I turned 65 in December. So those things together, oh, you don't have to clap for that.
They're clapping for the new 40.
For the new 40, that's right, that's what I hear. Thank you. Maybe I'll just stay up here and do the talk.
That's okay.
Anyway, as I considered those things and thought about my ministry and about our ministry, the journey through ministry, and I wondered, over these years, these 20 years, what have I learned? What, if anything, have I learned? How much more do I understand spiritual principle? Has there been an increase in wisdom within me? Has my life been transformed in some way? And then I moved into how much of what I teach is relevant and has been relevant. Has sharing spiritual principle made a difference? And just where are we as a congregation? Where are we on our spiritual path? And so Gary and I sat down and we discussed this at length. And so we have decided to do a year-long series together. This is new for us. This is brand new. And the series is called Don't Believe a Word I Say. And the reason for that is not because we've been lying to you all along, but because it's time for our movement to really start proving these principles that we espouse. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes, it is time. And so for that reason, for this entire year, we will be sharing ideas, teachings of the masters, exercises that can shift and transform our lives, and then inviting all of us to actually practice them and to put them into use. You know, I just read that Thomas Jefferson, when he was describing the unalienable right that we all have for the pursuit of happiness, that the word pursuit at that time did not mean to chase after. It meant to practice. So do you see, we all have this unalienable right to practice happiness. And so let's do that, shall we? We want to look ahead to a year of practicing. Practicing being happy and joyful, practicing connecting with that deeper intelligence within ourselves, connecting with spirit, expressing more of that in our lives. So can we all agree that our time together, we will be much more active in our spiritual practice?
Yes.
Yes. All right.
Anything else?
So yes, a couple more sentences. So don't just believe something because you hear it from the pulpit. You know, in this age of fake news, we want to actualize our power of discernment and activate our own spiritual self-discovery so that we can just stop only talking about God and start experiencing God. Yes. So are you with us?
Yes!
Take it away, Gary.
All right. So we're practicing something already. We're involved in some kind of practice. We're practicing the habits of our own being, as opposed to, you know, exercising ourselves from the routine of our yesterday self. We need to be in practice of actualizing what we want to bring forth as who we want to be in this world, what we want to walk around in the sense of who we are and what we're capable of creating. And so the part of the struggle is that we have to begin with a principle or an idea such as there's nothing and no one against you. There's just one presence and one power at work in your life. But don't believe us, because that doesn't matter what we say is true. It only matters what we have experienced as being what is true for us. And so how can we take a principle like there's one presence, one power, and experience the sense that everything's for us? Well, in order to arrive at that experience, we have to unravel, disentangle from all the ways in which we have our life as if it's against us. And we aren't taught how to do that in any school or class or any other activity, because that hasn't necessarily been the focus of our spiritual intent, of what it means to be in a spiritual path or way of life. And so when we bring together the science and the understanding of spiritual principles and what happens in our body mind, we have a clarity with respect to what has to shift in order for us to authentically alter the conditioned aspects of what we are, what we've become in our lifetime of taking in our experience of life as if our life defines us, as opposed to who we are and what we're capable of becoming as we enter into our way of being with what we're having, as if we are the one unto our life. And so that's a big shift to be able to kind of all the way just step into just by hearing it. You know, when Jesus talked to his disciples, he was telling them things like, don't worry about your life. Look at the birds, the fields, and the lilies. And how can we take those sayings and actually experience the truth of them independent of disentangling from our focus on our sense of not enough or our sense of unworthiness or our attention to what's not happening in the outer, that because of that we feel less than? And so part of our effort to really make 2019 a year where we actually actualize all that we're capable of becoming and being is recognizing that we just can't live in the awareness of these ideas and nod our head every time we come to church and affirm one presence and one power and then walk out of the room having someone or something against us or having somebody the matter with us, because that doesn't serve the greater good of why we come together in spiritual community, because we need each other to be able to support the effort. It's hard to maintain spiritual practice because it's all inward focus. It'd be much easier for us to practice playing the piano because we'd have a sense that we're making progress because we could see evidence of it. But the internal part of the practice part, the evidence doesn't come until there's the internal shift. And so that's what we need to be focused on creating, is those internal shifts. So I want to begin now with a short clip that's done by a research physician named we'll hear his name. Anyway, it's an experiment on the power of intention, the power of our being able to intend to bring forth something that lives authentically in the context of who we really are, as opposed to what gets created when we're living out of our sense of inadequacy or unworthiness. To be able to shift to a place to see that we have power to influence our experience in life if we come from the context of our sense of wholeness and worth, as opposed to separation and the disconnect. So let's check this out. And by the way, I forgot to say that I wanted to read this. I can't see it from back there. Our perceptions are not just observations of reality. They are also creators of it. So how we see our experience helps create what we're having. And here's a little research project that helps us understand.
Perhaps one of the more interesting experiments showing the power of intention and perception was one reported by a French researcher named René Pioche. In his experiments, he built a robot that contained a computerized movement generator that would make the robot move randomly. He then put it into an arena that he built that would track the movements of the robot. As you would expect, the robot would over time cover most of the entire arena through its random movements. But when René Pioche hatched baby chicks next to the robot to make the baby chicks think the robot was its mother, and then he placed the baby chicks next to the arena so that they could see the robot, but couldn't move towards it. The intentions of the baby chicks to be close to the robot influenced the random computer movements and caused the robot to move only in the half of the arena closest to the baby chicks. Think about that. If the intentions and perceptions of baby chicks can influence the behavior of a randomized computer robot in its environment, imagine how your thoughts, perceptions, and intention may be influencing yours. Science is beginning to establish that our minds literally create our reality.
And so if a baby chick that has an itty bitty bitty brain can get a random number generator to come towards it because it believes that that's its nature, that's its mother, what can we do with our big brain? Well, that's the point. The point is that there's power in mind and consciousness and intention, and if we are not using that consciously, intentionally, we're missing the capacity to really have impact on our life. And so in Unity, in New Thought, we specifically have a foundation principle that says we create our own personal reality through our thoughts, our beliefs, how we feel, how we're being with what we're having, what we're making our life mean. All of that creates what we're having. And so we literally have our life for us or not, as opposed to our life is against us. No, we literally have our life how it is unto us. And when we recognize that, then we must ask the question, if my thoughts and beliefs and feelings and how I'm being with what I'm having through my life patterns and choices, if that's affecting the quality of my life, wouldn't it be important for me to understand what's informing my thoughts, my beliefs, my sense of what I think or know about myself? What is giving me that insight, that information? Is it coming from out there? Which probably the answer is yes, because we're so affected by what's happening out there. If our sense of our well-being was coming from within, the things that would happen out there wouldn't bother us so much. Because we're not missing our connection to our sense of wholeness and worth, the place within us where all of what matters comes from. And so as we recognize that we have to, in the integrity of spiritual practice, understand how we co-create what we're having as our experience. Once we understand that that's the way it all works, we have to abandon the story that explains how we're having our life. Because the story keeps it encapsulated in our consciousness, and we continue to replicate the evidence that that story is grounded in. And so in order to exercise ourselves out of the story, we need a different dimension of self to access that informs the part of us that is replicating our past through our habits of being and the circuitry that perpetuates that. And so we have to understand what is the mechanism of consciousness, what informs those aspects of ourself that are generating our own personal reality. And so as we begin to look at that question, we understand that our sense of a self identity, our sense of beingness, is in the context of this body-mind process. And, you know, we look at scripture and we hear the admissions. Yeah, speech impeachment. Thanks. So Apostle Paul says, you know, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So they didn't have any brain science back then. So when they talked about the mind, it was more than just the head. And when Paul would say, let that mind be which was in Christ Jesus be in you, he wasn't talking about a bunch of ideas. He was talking about a consciousness, a connection to a greater sense of self that lives in the identity that I am, that I am. I am a child of God, or I am that which God has sent. If you see me, you see the Father who has sent me. That consciousness that Jesus that we attribute to Jesus, we need to understand in the context of what is the marriage of the head and the heart, because that's the mind that that Paul was describing, that we want to allow to happen in us in order for us to activate and access that dimension of ourself that's not tethered to the past. And so we can look at the head and we can say, well, our brain, basically, its superpower, what makes it work so good is it has the capacity to differentiate. But the unintended consequence of that is that it creates other. It creates a sense of other out there, a sense of separation, and therefore it is compelled to predict and control, to have things be a certain way in order to be able to function efficiently. And therefore, then the ego arises in the context of all the circuitry that happens inside of our head. But then there's the dimension of the heart, which is something that is just now coming into the vanguard of science and the marriage of quantum science, understanding the essence of the heart, not just as a physical pump that lives in our body, that is for generations a metaphor of this dimension of ourself that is infinitely eternal, but that the heart has actual neurological circuitry, and science now identifies the heart brain, the little brain in the heart. It's one of three brains now identified, three neurological nexuses in the body, such as the head, the heart, and the gut, are the three brains. And when we understand how they all work together, and that we have to consider that the mind that we're wanting to engage, or at least activate, it's just not living in our head, because that's the circuitry of separation. Our heart is a circuitry of oneness. Our heart is what unifies, what reconciles, which forgives. Our heart is what integrates. Our heart is what gives us a portal, a connection to our authentic or higher self. And when we access the power of the heart, and when we understand that the dimension of our heart is more than just a pump, but actual circuitry that informs how our brain operates, how it is capable of bringing a kind of coherence between the left and right hemispheres, and how it helps decompartmentalize the way in which our brain operates just by becoming coherent in the heart. When we understand the science behind this, we can see why, as HeartMath has researched and identified, how heart coherence has enabled people all over the world to accelerate their learning, their creativity, their productivity, and their well-being simply by having the practice of including their heart in any kind of cognitive decision or choice-making process. Can't believe all that came through. All right, here's another movie. Okay, I went by it. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll tell people what's coming. Thank you. So the movie that's coming is a movie done by Greg Braden, who's written a great book called Human by Design. Jane and I have just completed reading it, and it's all about how we have been designed to be able to transcend any earthly obstacle. We've been designed to be able to be bigger than any situation that we might have as a challenge. And when we understand the science behind why that's so, we will begin to be more motivated to activate that. And so here's a nice, really well-done movie that basically represents what we're trying to create together as this energetic field of heart-centered coherence, and know the power of what happens when people of like mind generate this kind of coherence and what is possible. So that's the introduction.
When a certain number of people come together and they choose in a moment of time to create a precise emotion in their hearts, that emotion literally can intentionally influence the very fields that sustain the life on planet Earth. These fields are now implicated in everything from the immune response of humans throughout the planet, climate, weather patterns, cycles of war in peace, our ability to solve problems, our cognitive abilities, all of these, as different as they sound from one another, are all linked to our relationship to the magnetic fields of the Earth. So what makes this so beautiful is every human on the planet is linked to the field. Not every human on the planet has to be consciously aware of their relationship to benefit from what a relatively few number of people come to understand. And the bottom line is this, is that when we choose to feel feelings that create what is called coherence in our bodies. Coherence is the language, the quality of the language between our heart and our brain. Certain kinds of heart-based experiences, such as appreciation, gratitude, forgiveness, care, compassion, those are the ancient understandings that have always been taught in the truest traditions of our past, and now our own science is finding that those same traditions are now documenting this very real effect in our hearts. When we can feel those feelings in our bodies, they're mirrored in the field, and everyone benefits from the experience of real time.
That's what we're doing every time we do our meditations. We're doing a heart locking. We're becoming coherent. And as we create the energetic field, then we create a dynamic where we become modulated by the coherence that we create together, as opposed to being modulated by the separation that we walk in here with. And so if we're not working energetically with our way of transforming our lives and working in spiritual practice, we're not including our body and our mind and our the drivers that bring those systems into coherence and balance. So Dr. Childrey, who is the founder of the Institute of Heart Math, and by the way, there's so much research now on the power of the heart, how the heart itself, once again as a brain with a nervous system, has precognitive capacity. That's why it's intuitive, because it senses things 5 seconds before it becomes even apparent to our eyes, to our brain. And so the research shows that the heart knows before the head is able to even make sense of things. That's why if we have a practice of going to our heart, we activate intuitive dimension. And when we understand that our heart knows but doesn't necessarily tell the brain, it doesn't necessarily tell the brain what it knows until we connect the heart to the brain. And that's the missing piece. We just think that the heart should just do that automatically. Well, it does things automatically. That helps regulate the efficiency of our brain. But if we want the wisdom of the heart, we have to connect the brain to it, just like connecting your USB cord into the power slot. Since emotional processes work faster than the mind, it takes a power stronger than the mind to bend perception, override emotional circuitry, and provide us with the intuitive feeling instead. It takes the power of the heart. And so we're wanting to actualize a dimension of ourself that has the power to inform our awareness as to the field of possibilities. Absent of that, our awareness is focused and derives its intentionality out of our fears, our inadequacies, our insecurities. Our heart has no context for any of that stuff. It doesn't know any unworthiness or any inadequacy. It just knows it wants to connect. It wants to create. It wants to heal. It wants to prosper. And when we add that voice to the conversations as to how we're going to be with what we're having, something else occurs that is independent of our fears or insecurities. And until we practice and make a habit out of that, we won't know that that's the case. You know, Jay and I talk about all the examples we have of just intentionally applying these principles. There was this one woman who came to us. We were working with doing a workshop at some church, and she wanted our time, and we were tired, and we were needing to leave. And I wasn't as far as long or evolved as I am right now. And I said, you know, Just ask your heart. I just told her, ask your heart. And we taught the technique. And she left pissed off, and I you know, I just really didn't care. And then she came back the next day and she said, thank you. Thank you. Because the answer she received, which was about her kids, couldn't have come from any advice that I would have been able to give to her. It had to come from there. And when we understand that there is a dimension of ourself that knows what is best for us, and it lives independent of what we think is what's important, then it's as if we're sitting at the feet of our master. And who would not want to avail themselves? Well, I can see this as a part of me that doesn't want to hear that I should be more mindful in certain areas, or that I should take more responsibility, or I should stop complaining. And we all understand that there's this part of us that has as its aim to kind of derail any effort that we might make. But you see, that's the habit of the old circuitry. And once we access the heart, that voice fades. It doesn't have any substance to it. So we need to understand that when we're triggered, this is one of the better times to begin to practice activating the heart, because this is what happens in our brain. So when we have a perceived threat, the amygdala in our head sounds the alarm that there's a threat out there. Once again, the amygdala is a structure in the brain that would rather be wrong 99% of the time than miss the one time it failed to keep you safe. And so consequently, it's looking for evidence of what's against me all of the time. It's scanning. We're not thinking about it, but it is scanning all the time. And the moment something pops in, it's going to sound the alarm. And then when that happens, the thalamus wakes up the brainstem. If the brainstem is asleep, it's like your computer that's taking a nap. You have to wake it up. The same thing happens. And then after that, the brainstem sends norepinephrine throughout the brain. It's a neurotransmitter that helps all the circuits, our default mode network, the network that wants to protect us and make everything about us, that becomes turned on. The next thing that happens is the sympathetic nervous system signals the organs and muscles for the fight-flight response. It will shut down the digestive system, shut down the immune system, shut down the production of saliva, increase the closure of the eyes and focus, myopic and heart rate, everything increases. We get prepared to fight or flee. Now, this is neurologically. It may be just someone judging us out there. And then the hypothalamus prompts the pituitary prompts the adrenals to release cortisol and adrenaline, the stress hormones, and then within 2 seconds, we're fully triggered and into our defensive posture or reactive behavior. Our body-mind is hijacked. And so we have 2 seconds. We have 2 seconds to move into our heart. Because when we move into the heart, we can cancel out this cascade. But it won't happen until you move your head out of whatever it is engaged in and place it right there physically on your heart. And if you have to go like this, you need to do that. Okay, what do you think they do this for? It's to remind them. I can't believe I did that either. All right, for some reason what's happening here? Okay, so I need to finish up here. So there's the 5 steps of asking your heart the question. And so the reason why I want us to learn these 5 steps and why it lands on asking your heart the question is because that to ask your heart the question takes it to the next deeper level. You can do the first 3 steps and achieve a kind of quick coherence that settles your nervous system and entrains your body processes to be more even. But you don't necessarily begin to develop the conditioning of the relationship to go to your heart in the context of life situations. So this practice enables you to intentionally ask your heart a question and listen for the answer, so you begin to build the awareness of how that circuit works. Bless you. So you need to be able to ask a question and then feel or sense a shift in your body. And in the beginning, that takes practice because, you know, we're trained to think, oh, I must think that differently now. No, it's to notice how we've shifted and to notice what we're feeling. So we focus on our heart. We actually, as I mentioned, as Jane mentioned, we have to intentionally say, okay, I'm placing my awareness now on my heart. And what this does, it trains you, gives you a technique. When you're caught up in some kind of life situation, just do this. And then begin the practice. You can leave that part out. And then slow your breathing. So we ask you to focus on your heart, and if you just simply breathe rhythmically and slow it down a little bit slower than usual, neurologically you begin to shift from your sympathetic nervous system to your parasympathetic nervous system. You move from beta to alpha brain waves. So there's things that happen that help you out neurologically. And then you need to feel a rejuvenating feeling, such as care, or compassion, or appreciation, gratitude, compassion, empathy, just as we practice. And then finally, you need to ask your heart the question. You just have to make it simple. And remember, your heart doesn't need the backstory. It's not encumbered by all the baggage that your head has to offer. So just ask your heart. You know, when people come to us in counseling or to get support, they have to tell us the story. And then we hear the story, but we don't know what their innermost being needs. All we can do is help them embrace what they're having and know that it's for them. But if you just try going to your heart and asking the question, that is so powerful. So that has to be experienced. And then finally, you have to listen for the answer. Okay, so here's the slide that gives you the actual steps. If you want to take a picture of this, this is what I do. I don't know why this.
Can you go back? Yeah, go back for a second. Let's take a picture.
Okay. Why is that happening?
You can also get it streaming.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I don't know, my computer's blocking out this part right here, but the first step is allow your awareness to move from your mind to the area of your heart. Let's do that. Begin to breathe a little more slowly than usual, about 5 or 6 breaths per minute for 5 or 6 seconds per breath. And then to the best of your ability, feel a genuine sense of care, appreciation, gratitude, or compassion. And then ask your heart a question, and then be aware of how your body feels immediately as you are asking the question. So next Sunday is my opportunity to speak again, and I have to feel guided with respect to what I'm going to share. So I don't have a sense specifically of the next thing, but suffice to say that this series is really about us kind of looking at what we're describing as the path. And then really being clear as to why it is that this is important for us to really understand and value. And then what is the practice? What are the incremental steps that we can apply to being able to move the needle so that we can actually see that we can make progress? And then my goal, and I want partners in this. If you want to do this with me, I'm wanting partners. My goal in 2019 is to live with ease and grace. And that means I have to release any sense of scarcity, judgment, and struggle. If you're wanting to release your sense of scarcity, judgment, and struggle, then practice this for this next week, and then we can check in and see how you all are doing. How does that sound? God bless you all.
Thank you, Gary. Well, unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, and for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God and the many paths for God, for we know there is only one power, one presence, and one life. So whoever you are and wherever you are on your journey of transformation, you are always welcome here. This morning, we would especially like to thank or welcome anyone who is here for the first time. And if you are willing to, we'd like you to raise your hand so our ushers can provide you a packet of information. So on the outside of that packet is a form that you can fill out and be added to our mailing list for weekly e-newsletters. Do we have one more up front? We have one up front, this gentleman right here, Alan. And if you're interested, please fill it out and drop it in the love offering bag as it comes around instead of giving a donation today. You can also take that packet to the bookstore and get a copy of today's service. And the bookstore is directly straight across from these doors here, as well as go to the barista stand and get a beverage of your choice. All right. And if you have any questions, we do have some welcome team members there wearing the yellow scarves. And feel free to ask them any questions that you might have, and we are certainly glad that you are here. So now's the time for us to welcome and greet each other with a handshake, a hip bump, a high five, or a hug. Anything that you feel comfortable with.
Hello, hello, there we go. We are all friends here. There are no strangers once you walk inside that door. We welcome you to linger in our family of love and hold you in our hearts the way you are. We are all friends here. There are no strangers once you walk inside that door. We welcome you to linger family of love and hold you in our hearts the way you are.